Welcome to ASME TechCast, bringing you the innovators, the innovations, and the issues that push the envelope of engineering. I'm Louise Poirier, Senior Editor at Mechanical Engineering Magazine. Today, I'm joined by Lena Zeldovich, who wrote Mechanical Engineering's October-November cover story, which dives into the engineering feats and solutions that brought NASA's James Webb Telescope into its current home, orbiting the sun about a million miles away from Earth. Lena grew up in a family of Soviet scientists, listening to stories about black holes, supernovae, and dying neutron stars, and she learned English in her 20s after her family moved to New York. Now an award-winning journalist, author, speaker, and Columbia J School alumna, she covers science, medicine, technology, and space. She's also the author of The Other Dark Matter, Science and Business of Turning Waste into Wealth and Health, published in 2021. Lena, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. You mentioned to me that you have a special relationship with space. So to kick things off, I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about that and how it shaped your approach to this story.
Sure. So I can probably say that in my family, cosmology was a family business. My father was a theoretical physicist who was studying gravitational waves, like a space phenomena that are kind of like ripples in space and time and in the fabric of the universe. And they're caused by neutron stars and black holes spinning around and kicking out this massive waves of energy. So Einstein predicted they exist and they were confirmed to exist in 2016. But back then in the 70s, my father was one of the people looking for them. So my childhood bedtime stories revolved around various cosmic cataclysms. Other kids listened to like Little Red Riding Hood being eaten by a wolf. But I listened to stories about black holes, dying stars, and supernova explosions, and meteorites hitting Earth, and life on other planets. So all these fascinating topics. My dad also was not the only physicist in the family. We had another one, a very, very famous Russian physicist and cosmologist, Yakov Zeldovich, who was the founder of the Big Bang Theory, and a bunch of other things too. So I actually remember sitting through one of his lectures about the Big Bang as like a 12-year-old because my dad dragged me there and I was arguing with him that I wouldn't understand anything. But Yakov Zeldovich was also very famous for being a very good teacher. And to my surprise, I understood a whole lot more about how the universe was created than I thought. So all of that definitely fueled my childhood imagination. So on one of my birthdays, I convinced my cousins to travel back in time to when the universe was first created so we could see it being born. So we took my kids' table, placed its legs up on my bed, huddled together in between those legs and started jumping up and down to simulate the rough space odyssey. So the table essentially became our time machine and we were using its legs as throttles and they were starting to get loose. So my dad looked in and yelled at us to stop breaking the table. And I yelled at him back, like, we can't stop. We're being sucked into a black hole. So he kind of growled at us and left, kind of complaining about having to fix the table. So I should say the physics genes skipped me completely. So even in my science journalism work, I did not write about space topics for a while. I was always afraid that they're too complex. But when there's an engineering aspect involved, I feel that I can handle that. My first degree was in computer science engineering, so I'm kind of on familiar turf. So Webb launch story was one of them.
That's fantastic. I'm just picturing the table situation, and that's amazing. So let's talk about how the story came together. I understand it was a little bit bumpy at first when you first took on the assignment.
Yeah, so Jeffrey and I first talked about it in January 2020, and I started working it right away. But strangely enough, I couldn't get people to talk to me. I was asking NASA for interviews, and they were sending me back links and documents. And that's not enough for a feature story. You need to talk to people, and more than one person, multiple people doing multiple things. So I never really found out why, but my guess was, maybe like my gut feeling was, and after like reporting on stories for a while, you like learn to like get these gut feelings about what's happening. I felt that it was so much at stake before the launch. And the launch was delayed several times because Webb wasn't ready. So I thought that it just wasn't the right time for a conversation. People didn't want to talk before they actually saw this massive thing up there in orbit. And it was, done and over with. Then the pandemic came and everything came to a screeching halt, and we kind of shelved the idea till better times. And later, actually earlier this year, we revived it.
Oh, that's fantastic. So gosh, about how long was it after the launch that you actually were speaking to everyone, when they were comfortable talking with you?
So the launch was on Christmas Day in 2021, and it went like perfectly. Like it went so well that people later told me they were like surprised and shocked that it actually went so well. But I haven't, it took me a while to come back to the project because in the end of 2021, I was working on a book. And I didn't come back to it until I completely serendipitously ran into Nancy Levinson, the interim director of the Space Telescope Science Institute in Santiago, Chile, of all places, because we were both invited to speak at their annual Congress of the Future. So on the first morning of the Congress, I sit next to the bus, like next to this lady, and we start talking. And she says, "Oh, I'm going to speak about the what Webb found so far." And I was like, "Where are you from? Like, what do you do?" And she said, "Well, I'm the interim director of the Space Telescope Science Institute." I'm like, "I've been working on the story. Well, I've been trying to work on the story for like a couple years now. Can I come and visit you at the Space Telescope Institute?" And she was like, "Sure, anytime." And by the way, the Space Telescope Science Institute is the organization that operates all space telescopes for NASA in terms of getting the images and communicating with these massive research stations flying up in space. So she was like, "Yeah, sure. You have a standing invitation." So a couple of months later, I was in their control room speaking to the people who are actively engaged in the launch, the design, and the assembly of the telescope, and so on.
That's fantastic. Talk about luck.
Yeah.
wow. Well, 10 years, $10 billion, is an incredible investment of time and money. But Webb's already showing us amazing things that scientists have never seen before. Just this past week, we're recording this before Labor Day, but the telescope captured the best ever photo of a distant whirlpool galaxy, and it's just found new structures within a supernova. Did you get a sense as you were talking to the researchers and engineers that they knew just what they were creating and what it would mean for astronomy, cosmology, and so much more?
Yeah, so the Webb has already gathered so much interesting data, including some that sort of challenge some of the assumptions of how old the universe is or how quickly stars and galaxies form, which is like super exciting to the astronomers, and it gives them a lot of info to debate and study and research. Did they know what they were creating? In some ways, they did, which is why they wanted to send this new telescope up there, which is why they spent so much money on it and so much effort. And I think, part of it, the delays in launching it were caused by the fact that they wanted to get everything in perfect order. So I don't know if they knew what they were going to find. I probably had some ideas, but they were certainly hoping to learn a whole lot about the universe and how it came to be and what it's doing. And I think they already had a lot of surprises. Like when I was there, they all sounded excited and surprised by exactly how well the web was performing.
That's fantastic. They certainly were thrilled, I guess, with the zero complications after it got up into space. That's definitely something. Yeah. So, there are so many amazing feats of engineering on this telescope. The folding and unfolding of massive mirrors. Solving material dilemmas with beryllium and gold. Just the whole process of launching this telescope out into space and having it assemble itself. What was it among all of these innovations that you uncovered that you found the most compelling?
Everything. Like, seriously,
Right.
everything. So there is a YouTube video out there of how this web launches into space and how it goes through the process of, like, oh, for several weeks, how it unfurls itself, from the rocket into what it is today. And I don't think I'm gonna exaggerate if I say that I probably watched this video close to 100 times because I found it completely mesmerizing. I just would watch it over and over and just marvel at the fact of how it was doing all of that, particularly after I spoke to to the people who built bits and pieces of it, and I realized how much of a challenge it was to make this incredibly complex structure to work in space with, this incredibly low temperatures that you can somewhat simulate on Earth, but you still don't know how it's going to be up there in orbit. Like, what if something shifts during the launch? What if something gets stuck? Like, the mirrors were supposed to be aligned so perfectly, because otherwise the images would be blurred and it basically they would be of no use. So it was really amazing. I guess one earthly story of web of building this telescope kind of stood out to me. So the Webb's primary mirror is made of 18 hexagonal segments made of beryllium and coated in gold, because gold reflects almost all of the infrared light, which is what Webb needs to gather. And it was when I actually read how what it took to build and assemble these mirrors, it was really amazing. So these segments began their journey as beryllium powder in the mines of Utah. Then they were formed into mirrors in Ohio and Alabama. They were prepped for coating in Colorado. They were coated with gold in Morristown, New Jersey, kind of across the river from me, just to name only a few pit stops. And when I was thinking, I was imagining, the mirrors are huge, how they traveled the country, like on trucks and, from this state to that state, and they're probably lifted with cranes and put on some kind of wheels to, like, take them around and stick them into these chambers and whatnot. I was just completely extraordinary. There's no pre-approved process for that, right? So, like, basically everything people building them did was from scratch. So yeah, that's Yeah, I kind of like lived with that idea for a while, kind of like tracing it in my mind. I thought it was really remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, these mirrors have traveled more than some of us have traveled in the past several years.
Sure.
Right?
For sure. Yeah.
When we write and research and write these kinds of massive cover stories, so much gets left on the side because you just really have to become as much of an expert as you possibly can on a subject on which most of us really know nothing about when we're going into it. I'm curious, what are some of the pieces that you didn't get to include?
Sure. So I, had I had more words, I would have included my childhood time travel journey, because in a way, writing this story, I felt like I've completed a circle, because Webb is essentially a time machine. The way it gathers light, it can gather light from the very beginning of the universe existence, from like 14 billion years ago when it was first created. Webb is our window, our eyes into that early universe. So with Webb, we essentially can travel to the beginning of times, which is what I tried to do on my birthday with a bunch of my cousins. And it is just so amazing that this childhood play is almost a reality now. You can't go there physically, but with technology, you can. That is one. And another one that I wish I could include is more of my actual visit to the Space Telescope Institute. With all with these things, you plan things in advance, you like arrive early because, God forbid, your train gets delayed and you're there too late, and you have like these 2 hours to interview, five people and whatnot. So I arrived there way too early, which was actually good because I had a chance to go to their cafeteria and grab a sandwich. And so I am sitting there and eating my sandwich. And it is literally 2 or 3 days after Webb found several unusually bright spots on its images. And a team of scientists published a study stating that they believe that these spots are six huge galaxies with millions of stars, all created very early in cosmic time, about like 5 or 7 million years after the Big Bang. However, according to how we currently perceive the Big Bang theory, this isn't enough time to create so many huge galaxies with so many stars, because there's simply not enough time to form them. Stars and galaxies don't form that quickly, according to our current understanding of physics. And that caused an uproar among scientists in this field. So, some are saying, well, it's time to reconsider the theory, and others are saying, well, we don't even know if this bright spots are in fact galaxies. This is what we think they are. What if they're not? And so I'm sitting in the cafeteria, and everybody around me is talking about that. And they're arguing, well, not arguing, debating. And I'm just sitting here quietly minding my own business. And I am thinking, oh my God, an average IQ of an average person around me is probably upwards of 180. I'm just going to keep quiet and hope that when the time comes to interview some of them, I can sort of pretend to be on the same wavelength of intelligence, so they will continue talking to me. So there was like a very humbling moment.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, I can empathize with you completely. There are oftentimes you interview someone and they're just so brilliant, and you think, how am I going to have a conversation with this person? Something else I wanted to touch on is, your story briefly mentions the idea of the next NASA telescope, and I know Webb has only been in space for, gosh, it'll be going on 2 years in December, but what sort of rumblings have you heard from the team, in terms of, when they might be looking at starting to develop Webb's successor?
Well, from what I understood, Webb's successor is in the works, but it's kind of like in the early stages. By the way, when I was there, they showed me, well, now electronic versions of like the Webb original drawings of some of its parts back then when things were on paper. It's really interesting to see them. So they kind of those early stages of conceptualizing Webb's successor, and it's going to take a really, really long time to do. But what this new Webb telescope is going to do, things that Webb isn't super helpful or isn't optimized to do. For example, Webb isn't super helpful in identifying life on other planets. So scientists need to be able to look at certain molecules present in the atmospheres of planets that may indicate that there is life there, like oxygen or CO2 or water. And Webb isn't optimized for that. It has certain abilities. It gives on certain information, but it's not as good as it could be. So that's what Nancy Levinson told me. So the next telescope, should be, would be, will be, that's the idea. It's in very early stages, but Nancy told me that it will be even bigger and better than Webb. So I hope I'm still around to cover that story.
Gosh, that would be incredible. I hope it's not another 10 years, but we'll see. All right. Well, it looks like we're going to have to call it there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lena. It's been an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
All right. And be sure to check out Mechanical Engineering Magazine's upcoming cover story on the Webb Telescope, which will be available in print and online in the coming weeks. And if you'd like to hear more great conversations on a wide range of engineering topics, please subscribe to ASME TechCast on your podcast platform of choice. I'm Louise Poirier. Thanks so much for listening.